The following episode of Footy Prime the Podcast contains violence, coarse language, talking of shite, full frontal nudity, and adult scenes. Listener discretion is advised. BetMGM, the place for soccer in Canada, presents Footy Prime.
Oh, let's go!
Footy, footy, it's time to get this party started. It's the footy, footy, it's time to get this party started. With Danny, Jimmy, Gregor, and your drinking JC. All we know and all we talk about is footy, footy. It's time to get this party started tonight.
BetMGM, the place for soccer in Canada, presents Footy Prime. It's World Daily. For the last time. Why is it the last time? Well, it's the last time because this is the day. The day we've been waiting for all these weeks, all these matches, all these storylines. It is World Cup final day. And whoever would have thought would have seen Argentina against Spain in the final? I mean, what a stunning development. Okay. Many people have France in the final, but still, Spain against Argentina, not exactly a shocker. But I think if we're honest to ourselves, Amy Walsh, Dan Wong, Jimmy Brennan, Jeff Cole, Craig Forrest, and myself, James Sharman, if I'm honest, and you were told back in, when did it start? June the 11th, I think it was, that correct, this would be the final. I don't think there'd be too many stunned people. Too many shocks. Is that fair to say, Craig Forrest?
I think that's fair to say. Two of the best teams in the world. Yeah. Matches up pretty well. Lots of intriguing storylines around it. Go Spain.
Ooh, <yeah. laughs> Is that the common sentiment, do you think? Go Spain? Why are people against Argentina and little Leo Messi ahead of this one? Because that's all, I mean, my algorithm is screaming that. At the moment.
So true.
Well, why? What's the reason?
I think it has something to do with the fact that Infantino outwardly favors them. the fact
Argentina.
That yes, Argentina. The fact that any of the VAR interventions, given all the fouls that Argentina have committed, and opportunities to do so, no VAR intervention has gone against Argentina. So I think especially to the casual fan who's been drawn in to this World Cup, I think they're very much seeing it as a run by the holders that has been facilitated. And it's not true, right? I disagree with that vehemently. Like, I don't think that's the angle at all. I think it's a team that's playing for Messi, but I'm with Forrest, go Spain. Because I think Messi is his own entity. I said this on previous pods. And Argentina, the team, the collective, I think it's very easy to root against.
It is incredible, right, that not one VAR call has gone against Argentina.
Incredible. Is it incredible? I'm just sorry. I'm starting a conspiracy theory. But
well, I think you said that this morning on the Dark Web Dubs, that little stat, that little nugget.
Forestro sent it, actually.
Yeah. Oh, was it Forestro? Okay, mm-hmm. I apologize. I mean, Jimmy, I don't believe games are rigged at this level. I don't. But is there an inherent bias towards Argentina through be it VAR, be it refereeing, just because of who they are? Do you believe that?
No, I don't believe that. I don't think they've done anything wrong throughout this tournament. And there was no need for VAR with them because of the football that they play. Everybody else, 47 teams, needed VAR, but Argentina didn't because they're very clean, fluid.
He's been pendulum swung to the opposite that end of the spectrum of conspiracies. Hey. This is like a whole other conspiracy.
Be careful, Jimmy. Be careful with sarcasm, man. It doesn't wash over well with the masses, apparently. Okay.
Well, I was not being sarcastic. I'm just saying they're a very clean team that didn't need VAR. But I think when you going back
to
the initial question he asked was that I think this is the first time that the top four teams going into World Cup have actually gone to a semifinal and then obviously two made it to the final, which is incredible. But I'm looking forward to this match today. I think it's going to be a good brand of football. I think Spain's going to win it. I just like the way that they play. I think with Rodri in the middle of the park, I think he's just going to control the game. I think Cucurella and Poro on the right back position are too strong. They limit anything coming forward, but then also give that attacking prowess. So I think, my opinion, Spain's going to be the team. I mean, look, who goes into World Cup, plays seven games and has six clean sheets? It's incredible. Like, just defensively, mm-hmm. they just do not give you anything. And they're the type of team as well, for me, that they can see out, they can see out games. They won't crumble. It won't be like an England game where they're going to end up conceding or
falling apart.
Right? I think just mentally and tactically, they're just too strong. And I think this is going to be Spain's game. So my vote for today's match will be Spain.
Craig, do you concur? Excuse me. It's going to be that easy.
Still recovering from England.
You're all choked up.
Yeah, I'm choked up from Friday still. Whenever it was. When was it? I can't remember when it was.
Wednesday.
Was it Wednesday? I can't.
Yeah.
Craig, do you concur? Is it going to be that straightforward?
I don't think it'll be straightforward, but I think Spain will. When, if they get ahead, I think Spain will be very difficult to come back against. I don't think this is a side that will relinquish the ball. I think they can possess it so brilliantly well that I think that will be the downfall for Argentina. But we'll see.
Well, I mean, Argentina has shown, though, Dubs, that ability to adapt and change their system and style no matter what, perhaps more than any other team. You can't say this is the way Argentina play because they've been out of desperation. They've had to, throughout this tournament, find ways. Are we dismissing them too quickly here?
Yes. And I've said on previous pods that I think the longer this match goes and Argentina are able to hold Spain, because I don't think you can really frustrate them the way that you can other typical opponents, because they're so masterful in possession. They're so composed. They're so technical. The movement, the rotation is they can get themselves out of any situation, no matter what pressure you throw at them. But I think if Argentina, and the way that they've adjusted, Scaloni playing kind of a 4-4-2 diamond, he does have the ability and the personnel, even with Messi on the pitch, to be able to control the dynamism in the flanks, and whether it's Porro getting up and down the line or Cucurella on the opposite side or Porro inverting and coming inside, I think there's a way that you can press them, especially when it starts with Simon. And then you see other times with Rodri dropping and he kind of joins like a back three and the fullbacks really bomb on. I think you also have the ability to pin them. Like, you can't stop them, but if you get Simon into a pattern where he's looking for, say the name again, Oyarzabal. Did I say it right?
You nailed it.
Pretty Thank you. Let's just capture it, JC, and then we'll just insert it in the future when I talk about their number nine. And get them playing that type of game, kind of force them into that. Then I think that Argentina do have a fighting chance. But if they're chasing the game and they're able to tire them out and tire the likes of Messi, even though he does 40% or 47% of all the time is he's walking and he's conserving. If you have him chasing and he's tired, and the entirety of the team that does so much to make up for that for Messi, when they do have the ball, then I think Spain, Forrest, you talked about this a couple pods ago, is while Spain are so impressive in possession, and that's where they want to control the game and can dictate terms, they're almost more impressive when they're without the ball and the way that they can smother and suffocate an opponent. Cue you, Craig Forrest, to talk about that.
I would agree with that.
Ready, Craig. Yeah.
When they lose the ball, there's usually three players within 10 yards of it to get it back quickly. That'll be something to look out for.
This message is brought to you by Tim Hortons at participating restaurants in Canada for a limited time.
Introducing Tim's Taste of the Globe, a limited time squad of globally inspired Timbits and iced cap flavors.
And trust us, this lineup came to play.
We're talking a Brazilian lime cheesecake Timbit,
a French chocolate creme brulee Timbit,
an Italian cappuccino Timbit,
and a Canadian fireworks Timbit,
plus a Mexican caramel churro ice cap that absolutely deserves a chant.
It's game on at Tim's with the new Timbits and ice cap flavors from around the globe.
Try them all today.
I will.
I know you will. Now back to the show.
I think with Spain too, you don't really see them get frustrated regardless of the situation. Whereas I think Argentina, that frustration could come out in this match. If they're out of possession, they're chasing a lot, they want to play on the edge, they'll start getting aggressive, they'll start drawing, they're causing fouls. So I think this could be a game where the emotions might get the better of Argentina at times, just because of how cool and calm Spain is in possession. They're just very relaxed and free-flowing.
As opposed to all the other Argentina games, we didn't really see them get frustrated or get combative or lash out. That's not their style, Jimmy.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying.
I wouldn't be surprised that if they use a similar tactic as they used versus England, a very different opponent. But early, I mean, you saw what happened in the first 3 minutes, right? Yeah. Where they are incredible pests. They're highly technical and incredible footballers, but they get under your skin and wind you up like nobody else. So they're going to try to get into Rodri's kitchen. They're going to try to get into Lamine Yamal's kitchen. Like, they're going to try to get at people and get them off their game that way.
Did you see the Tim Vickery piece? Tim Vickery is he's the man when it comes to South American football, English-speaking journalism. He's brilliant. He talked about Argentina when Scaloni was an assistant. Back in, I think it was 2010, and how he decided, you know, when he got the job, I need my team to play, I think, like Spain, like that. 4 seconds, you get the ball back. We must do that. And also how he reinvented Lionel Messi to be more a part of the team. And what he actually did, Scaloni, he actually dropped Messi's mate, Sergio Aguero, from a camp because they were just too tight. And Messi was so quiet. And all these players would come in expecting to be wowed by the great Lionel Messi, but Messi didn't give a damn about anyone. He's like, he was so quiet, wouldn't talk to anyone, even on the pitch. So he dropped Aguero and forced Messi to come and be more involved with the team. And they said it was like a switch was hit. And suddenly it became about him. And he realized right about the mid-2015, 16, that Argentina was now the most important thing to him. Barcelona was kind of going away. He was falling out with them. He had to now focus on Argentina, and that's when the switch was hit. I've got to find it, and I'll repost it because it was brilliant. You saw it, Dubs.
I did. You shared it on the dark web. It was fascinating.
Oh, right.
Yeah, because I don't think a lot of people give Scaloni the credit that he deserves. One in kind of building this and then shepherding it along and seeing the success that they've seen over the last 4 years, but even prior to that, and how he had to orchestrate it by dropping one of the greatest ever. And imagine how pissed Messi must have been initially and how you had to handle that, right? But you needed him to be integrated in the squad and needed the players to care about him more than just this figure who would show up and save them all on the pitch. It needed to be more off the pitch. So yeah, it's a brilliant clip if you can find it. It's really great insight into how this Argentina squad is built.
Have you guys ever seen that with your club teams or even your national team when you play for them? A player that you look forward to playing with, or he was coming and then you realize, man, he or she is just not what you expected. Maybe really quiet. Any examples of that?
That somebody was quiet?
Well, whatever, just different to how you expected. Like someone came in or you went to a new club and you're excited to be playing alongside this person and they just weren't quite what you anticipated.
No, about that. Love playing along certain individuals.
But
if I had Ian Wright up front, I was pretty happy, or Davor Šuker or DiCanio, I was happy to play with those guys.
No, I'm not saying you wouldn't be happy to play with them, but were they just different to what you expected when you first met them? Like DiCanio, what do you expect from him when he first came over?
Well, that he was a nutcase.
And was he?
Yes. Yeah. So he didn't disappoint.
Right. Okay, moving on. Next question.
That brilliant
that was like
question.
A fart in church.
Brilliant ad hoc question terms.
I won't be doing those anymore, apparently.
I have something to add to that if you'd like.
Please, Dubs.
So we know that Christine Sinclair and what she's done is the greatest ever goal scorer in football. She joined the women's national team when she was 16 years old, and she was so quiet. And then towards the end of her career, and obviously her impact on the pitch was incredible, was outstanding. But more and more as she got to understand who she was and how she'd become an influential part of the squad off the pitch, her influence and like her renown and her legacy almost grew because of what she could offer on the pitch. And it was about how her teammates cared for, how we got to understand her as a human being. So there definitely is a dovetailing of Messi at 39, who probably understands how he ticks better than he ever has, right? More so than looking across the pitch at a Lamine Yamal, who is going to be like the second or third youngest player, right, to participate in a World Cup final. So his kind of imprint, his impact on the team is always going to be incredible because of the talent. But when you can marry both the talent and then the individual's character and their influence off the pitch, it's almost like it can't be measured in that regard. You'll always have the stats, the metrics of on the pitch, but then what they mean to the nation, what they mean to, you know, their compatriots, the players that are to their left and to their right, like that is like the grand intangible. And that is why I think Argentina are going to be very, very dangerous in this final, because you can't account for that. And what the players are chanting, Sharms, you talked about one of the things they revisit after they miraculously are able to, you know, they're dead and buried versus Cabo Verde and then Egypt and then Switzerland, and playing a team that has always been the heavy favorites in Spain, who have just grown throughout this tournament. But when they're chanting, we're going to do it for Messi, like there's something about that that you almost can't stack up against.
It is all about the intangibles, right? Isn't it, with this Argentina team? If they're going to win, it's not about, I mean, obviously footballing ability, but we know Spain's a better team and they can control the game, but it's all about those intangibles. Like, yeah, do it for the Gipper, right? In this case, Leo Messi, which makes it fascinating, right? This isn't like France v Spain, which was like, okay, what a match that can be. Turned out to not be that great a match. But it was like, okay, footballing side against footballing side. Maybe we're dismissing Argentina, Jimmy, a little bit too much here by focusing so much on the intangible and what that brings, because they are actually a really good footballing side too. They're the world champions.
Yeah, they're, for example, listen, right? They're great. No, nobody's putting Argentina down. They're an unbelievable side. They deserve to be in the final because of the class that they have. But look, at the end of the day, it's just us and our opinions and picking who we think is on the day is going to be the team that wins. It's like anything. It's nothing personal. Both teams have exceptional quality. Both teams are very dangerous. And it's a 50-50 chance, really, but... You know, I'm just swinging towards Spain. I just think with the way that they play and defensively sound and organized, disciplined, you name it, going through everything that you talk about football, I think they'll end up winning this match. I just think they're too strong at the moment.
Also, for people out there listening, if you are under the age of 48 and you need to understand the one for the Gipper, win one for the Gipper reference that Sharms threw out, go on to the interweb and look it up. It's an old Notre Dame gridiron reference from the 20s or 30s, just so you know how in it we are.
Before our time, in fairness. It's even before our time, but I think people are aware of that, aren't they? Maybe it's died out. It's a good thing.
I think it has a bit.
Do it for the Messi.
One for the Gipper. Who's a Gipper? What is a Gipper?
Hey, Kratos, which team do you think has most at stake this one? Who's under the most pressure? Who's in that room? You know, whose palms are sweating more, Spain or Argentina?
I don't know. I think these players have been in big matches before. If you have the European champions against the South American champions, it doesn't. I don't think that they're fazed by it. They're just going through the routine like any other match, and obviously, it's not like every other match, but that's the way they'll prepare for it. And that experience in big match games will be brilliant for both of them, put them in good stead. But yeah, I don't think anybody's sweating over this other than the fact that you're going into a World Cup final, the biggest match of your life for Spain and Argentina. Been there and done it before, grinded it out. Yeah, it sets up well for sure.
Okay, but you got a Spain team with who are the key players? So you got Rodri, you got Lamal and Oyarzabal and, you know, Cucurella. A lot of these guys probably have another World Cup in them still, right? Mm-hmm. You look at Argentina, whether it's Messi or it's Rodrigo De Paul or it's, you know, You go to the defenders. It's Romero. He's not old, but he's so injury prone. You know, it could be a lot of these players last World Cup. It's an aging Argentina team. That was the big query going into this World Cup. Are they too old? Would that not make him a little bit like, man, we have to get this done now because there won't be a tomorrow?
I think so.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's always the case. You always got players that there is no tomorrow, if you like. Don't expect that Messi's going to play the next World Cup at 43. Although, never say never. Yeah. Yeah. He'll be walking 80% of the time. He'll still score two goals a game.
I think it's both teams are looking at it going, now it's now or never, because you know it's very rare to go back-to-back in World Cups. Very, very rare. I think it's only happened a few times. And you got to look at it and think, now's the opportunity, because in 4 years' time, who knows what's happening? Who knows how qualifying is going to go? Who knows how the next World Cup group, because you know who we're going to play against? And things change so much that it's about the moment. It's about now. And you've got it. You've worked so hard to get there, and it's all or nothing now. You don't even think about the next one.
Mm. Right. Their minds are very much single-minded on this today. Who cares about tomorrow?
Blinkers are on.
Just to what Jimmy was talking about, there has been no nation to have achieved back-to-back defending champions in six decades. The last time someone did it was Brazil at 58 and 62. And before that, it was Italy in 1934 and 1938. Oh. So if we want to talk modern day football with all the teams involved, basically, it's never happened.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I can't imagine the footballs, the soccer balls they were using in 1962 because the ones I used in 1978, if they got wet, it was like kicking a bag of cement.
They were like the tether balls on the playground, right? But you know what they did, though? Italy and Brazil, in order to achieve that feat, they won it for the Gipper. That's what they did.
Yeah, they did. That was on the locker room on the wall.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but in Portuguese, Gipper, and in Italian, Gipero.
Yeah. Gipero.
Which is a white fish.
A white fish. I love fishing for a Gipper.
But speaking of being single-minded, do you think that De La Fuente, do you think Scaloni, given the superstar on either side, if you categorize Lamine Yamal as such, who's rounding into full fitness and incredible form. We haven't quite seen it. We've talked about it like in a decisive action, whether it's a pass or a shot, like a goal for himself, where he's able to change the game just himself. Or Messi, who does it, he's done it time and time again, he's able to replicate it. Do you think each of these managers is changing things slightly to control for these players who can change the game in a blink of an eye?
I'm the wrong person to ask.
Yeah, I think so. Do you mean like tactically, defensively changing to adapt to those certain players?
That is exactly what I mean, Jimmy Brennan, yes.
Well, I was just trying to clarify, that's all. definitely, I think so. You have to. We know how dangerous Messi is, and he's the type of player that you have to keep an eye on him at all times. And the minute you take your eye off them, that's when you get punished. So every player is going to be aware. They'll try to clog the middle at times so that they don't allow him to get into his little pockets and produce his little bits of magic. They know how difficult that is. The thing is, too, a lot of players are very familiar with Messi on the Spanish side. Very, very familiar. And then Yamal, the exact same. They know how dangerous he is coming down that right-hand side. But it's not just Yamal, it's Rodri as well. How do you get into him? How do you stop him creating that flow and the rhythm in the game? So tactically, there's certain players that really affect the game that they're going to have to keep an eye on and try to put them in uncomfortable situations. Because if you give them that freedom and that confidence to play, that's when you're punished. So, you know, you look at it and think, Rodri, he's one that you got to keep an eye on. Messi, you have to keep an eye on. Yamal can change a game. You have to keep an eye on him. So there's certain players that they're going to be saying, okay, these are the keys to this game, and these are the key players that we have to really watch out for.
Mm-hmm.
So they're definitely going to be looking at it tactically. They'll be sitting there as well going, okay, we're 1-0 down. How does this game plan play out? How do we adjust? you know, we need a goal. We're desperation. Last 20 minutes. What is this going to look like? They'll be playing this game throughout their heads with the coaching staffs nonstop over the last number of days and just putting themselves in different scenarios. What if this happens? What if that happens? What if we get a man sent off? What's our next move? So there'll be a lot going on behind the scenes. And I can imagine they're not sleeping at night because they'll be just playing so many scenarios through their heads.
All right, Jimmy. So you're Scaloni. How do you make Rodri's life untenable, unenjoyable?
I don't know, Sharms. That's why I'm doing a podcast with you.
Fair enough. But just say.
it's a difficult one just because, you know, when you watch his movement, the way that he plays, he drifts as the game goes, and wherever the ball's moving, you start seeing players get focused on that ball, and they adjust. But he seems to go against the grain as well, and against the current, and just finds these little pockets as everybody's heads shift, bodies shift. He ends up drifting into certain areas where he's the man that's available now. And if you watch him closely, he's always just plays it as a little move, plays it as play switches again. He's finding another little pocket. I'm the outlet. Find me. Here I am. And that type of player is so difficult to manage because he's just constantly thinking and he's three steps ahead. But with Spain as well, it's their movement. I almost say at times it's, you know, when you set up a 4-4-2, when they're attacking, it's almost reversed. It's flipped, meaning that they play four across the top, four across the middle, leave two center backs back. It's like a 4-4-2 reverse. And that's how they pin teams in. But their movement in the middle, where they just drift into these pockets, they drift back, and it's very, very difficult to mark because you're asking players to pull out of positions just to keep an eye on them and mark them. And at times you can't because his movement's so fluid that you have to drop into your position tactically to make sure that you're organized, disciplined. And the 1 minute you break the chain and you come out, well, that's going to be the weak area. And that's what they'll end up trying to do is, Rodri's movement, he's just trying to suck you out of certain positions where a hole is open up now we can penetrate and we can play through you. So those types of players they're a pain in the ass to play against, but they're just so clever, and you're playing, you're looking at them, admiring them, just going, your movement's so simple but so good and effective.
So you saw it in the second goal, the second goalie, Jimmy, that they scored versus France.
So clever, huh?
It's just like that type of movement.
For me, like I admire it. Like when I watch it, football, I like to watch the technical side, certain players, just their movements. And it's beautiful to watch. It's almost like you're at the cinema watching a beautiful play.
It's almost like poetry, right?
No, it is. Like, but right?
Forrest panned it last show, Jimmy. That's why it's a callback.
Yeah, not theater, poetry.
Right. Yeah. But I think if you're going to ask anybody to do that, to be tasked with it, especially in the build, and they're conserving possession, they're trying to progress the ball, and they're doing that via Rodri, it's going to be Enzo. Like, that's going to be a big ask of Enzo Fernandez, right, to drop in and try to control Rodri a little bit. But as you said, it's so difficult to do. What I'm most curious to see is how Scaloni deals with Lamine Yamal. Like, you've got, is it Tagliafico on that side and Martinez is that left-sided center back? It's going to be a big ask of Paredes to come over, to slide over as he's kind of screening the front of that back line to help. But then, like Jimmy's saying, you do that and you kind of tilt the field that way to try to account and control for what he can do to you and how he can hurt you 1v1, then you're leaving Dani Olmo out kind of like free reign finding the half space, or it's a Ruiz. Right. We talked about the mobility. I think Rodri proved me wrong because I think he's recovered. Like, he's the Rodri of old in the way that he's moving and the way that he's executing and orchestrating. Mm-hmm. But like, you have that dynamism around him, not just in the flanks, but in Ruiz. I think he's really been key. So you're leaving somebody like Pedri on the bench, but it's to the benefit of players who are more attack minded to complement Rodri, who's going to be that anchor point and that pivot deep into midfield.
It kind of convinces me that there's not much point watching this game. It's kind of a foregone
conclusion. I hope it's 6-4.
Yeah, no doubt.
Honestly, well, I hope there's an early goal. And like to Jimmy's point about the game state and having all kinds of plans, and Scaloni and De La Fuente having, you know, issues like you go down a goal, this is what the plan is. And then if we go up a goal, this is how we're adjusting this way. But that happens instantly. And then it doesn't become open necessarily because you have somebody who's so masterful, or a team who's so masterful in possession, like a Spain, who are always going to dictate no matter what's happening. But you force them to maybe be more progressive and more front-footed than they otherwise would be.
One more messy thing before we move on here. But it was 4 years ago that I think every show that covered that match, that final, said we saw the official passing of the torch from Messi to Mbappe. And here we are now, 4 years later, and we're talking about passing the torch from Messi to Yamal, right? It is absolutely insane. I mentioned Mbappe there. He played in a match yesterday, Wonga and JC. Let's roll in our little Timmy's bit here, and then we'll get to that match.
It's the World Cup. Watch Canada. Brought to you by Tim Hortons. Game on with
It's really good.
I like that. Oh, really well done. We're going to hear that today. Who's doing the national anthem? The U.S. national anthem?
I am. I'm doing the American national anthem because they're playing that for some reason.
Oh, okay.
That's right.
Tim's got a huge following down there right now.
No,
they do. Tim Hortons... a cafe and bake shop is what it's called down there.
That's right.
Who is it?
Seriously, who's singing the anthem?
The American anthem is someone extremely... Oh, my God. We'll find it. It's easy to find because we've got a Google machine. We can find out probably. But they will be doing that. They're the self-gratuitizing, you know...
Promotion?
You know what I mean. They'll make the most of
Jennifer
it.
Jennifer Hudson.
There you go. Jennifer Hudson. Who's got an amazing voice.
Yeah.
She's great. Yeah.
It's unusual that they play the national anthem of one of the host countries, right?
Yeah. Every match at the World Cup in the States have done that.
Yeah, I heard it in Seattle well before the match, yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
Better keep patting themselves on the back.
Absolutely. Trump's going to be there. Carney's going to be there. The Mexican Prime Minister's going to be there. Forget her name. But they're all going to be there. We'll see.
Smart lady. Hey, you know who else is going to be there?
Who?
Madonna, Shakira, The Bieber, and BTS. I'm looking forward to this 68-minute halftime show.
The longest
where they ruin the pitch.
The longest ever halftime show in a World Cup.
Curated by Chris Martin of Coldplay. Just so
what's that?
Knows.
Why doesn't he just play? I'd rather see Coldplay than any of them.
I would like to see what Madonna looks like right now. I don't care about her voice. I want to see how she's standing she's 10 years older than me. So she's getting to 70. I want to see what a 70-year-old Madonna puts out. How humping sexual it is. How sexual it is.
You hear what Forrest said? Humping the mic?
Yeah, I do. I want to see. Maybe she's got it all together still.
The old dry hump.
Well, she... And I hope she plays some of her 80s classics. That's what I'm hoping.
Dry hump is what I used to do when I was 14. Now Madonna's doing it when she's 70.
She's never incredible.
In jeans, was it?
She is incredible.
I'm a big fan.
Oh, me too. First poster I ever bought was of Madonna, the Like a Virgin cover. Yep. Served this purpose.
You took that down when you're 28.
Yeah,
you lost your virginity.
When I lost my virginity at 28.
Oh my God, it took you long enough.
Thanks, Madge. But I've moved on.
The funny thing is, he'd been married for 7 years already. Got married really young, Sharps.
Well, can you blame her? Wasn't consummated until 8 years later.
At your private school.
Oh, my private school, yeah. We didn't have dinner ladies. We had staff. Thank you very much. Okay, so where were we? Oh, yeah. You want to talk about the halftime show some more? I mean,
no, it was good. It's good time. It's good time.
We can whine and complain all we want.
But
about
it is going to be a 25-minute break, just FYI. 25 minutes, which is 10 minutes longer than normal, correct? Mm-hmm. And it'll be interesting. Everyone watch like that first 5-10 minutes because Super Bowl participants always talk about how difficult it is. And it always seems like the teams that have been there before can handle this stuff better. So it'd be interesting to see how Spain handles it compared to Argentina, even though this is the first 25-minute thing, 25-minute halftime. It'll be that first 10 minutes on back on the pitch will be, I think it'll be really important to see how both squads come out.
Well, Argentina know who Madonna is.
Way too long.
Yeah, you're right.
Right.
Yeah, but so after that 25 minutes, they've got to get.
Hopefully, they don't cry.
They're
going
to give them another 10 minutes to warm up. Like, well, how's it going to work? That's
probably
a hell of a long time to be sitting in the dressing room for 25 minutes.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how they're managing it, yeah. Right? From a player personnel standpoint, like the players who are going back on the pitch, like assuming there are no changes, it's your same 11 that's going back. They have to be doing something different to keep them fresh and active and to get them
I have an idea though, right? So to keep them fresh and warm, bring them out as the dancers to the music.
I like
you know,
that.
Yeah, it was like that little group, you know, all the you know having a great old time in the front of the stage.
Yeah.
They could be the players getting warm. That's what you do. Boom. Yeah. Kill two birds with one stone.
It's actually brutal. When you kind of break it down, that's going to be 31 minutes of just players standing around because you're going to have your hydration break, then a 25-minute halftime, another hydration break. That's nuts. It's brutal when you think about it, the whole thing.
I mean, they'll be in the gym on like the turf that you have, whether it's for sleds or otherwise, or maybe like I've been in stadiums before. Like when I think about the Women's World Cup in China and the Olympics where you're indoors and it was like a lower ceiling, it was cement, but it was fully turf. So because the game was happening before us and then our warm-up was affected, and I don't know if there was weather delays or what, but you're in there able to move the ball, like do everything that you would do out on the pitch as part of your warm-up, obviously, save for the long balls and things like that. But you could do rondos, you could do little warm-ups, you could do all of your activations in order to be ready and then just sprint down the tunnel and back on the pitch. So, I mean, they're at MetLife Stadium, right? So they have to have facilities like that. They're updated and modernized so that they can do everything they need to do. I imagine that's what they're up to.
Yeah, and
so
you'd hope they have warm-up rooms.
You might see it, yeah, but you might see it affect a team like Argentina, to Sharms's point, who are an older team, and you have somebody like Messi, assuming he's starting, which he will, you know, those 39-year-old legs, he can walk a lot, but I mean, maybe he's affected in a negative way.
Could it be positive for him too? Extra time to...
You don't want that break. It's really hard when you have a longer break to come back in. Like I was talking, I was on Ollie Brett's podcast, and like out of the 102 caps that I have for Canada, overwhelmingly, I'd say like 95 of them were as a starter. And part of it is like what type of player I was. But if I ever went on as a sub... And I did this a little bit in my college career. No, it's not a pat on the back. It's just like it was the nature of like who I was on the team, right? Sometimes coming in on as a sub, you feel terrific. You're ready to go. You don't have any niggles or whatever you do have, because Jimmy talks about the fact that a lot of, you know, you're never really fully 100%, but you're raring to go when you get into the game and you try to get up to tempo and you're like, your legs feel like garbage. Mm-hmm. So like there's something to that where like if you add that extra 15 or 16 minutes to your halftime and you're not doing anything special to kind of fix it or like account for it, that you could get on to the pitch for the beginning of that second half. And like the first 6 or 7 minutes, you're going to see it in the players. And that might be like the momentum changes, like we've seen with the hydration breaks. You might see a momentum change, not only because it's built in, because it's a restart for the second half, but you might see it more impactful because of the time that the players have been idle.
Mm-hmm. And if anyone's listening hears thumping, that's Dubs thumping her finger on the desk.
Oh, am I doing that?
Yeah, it's really good.
Yeah, point across. She's
gotta be emphatic in my...
Emphatic, exactly. But just another...
I suppose lymphatic for these players.
Yes.
Oh. That's right, yeah. Legs up the wall, get that circulation going. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
The final is at MetLife Stadium, East Rutherford, New Jersey. Temperatures and forecasts around 27 degrees Celsius. Barcelona
over there.
27 degrees Celsius with light breezes and low humidity and there's going to be no wildfire smoke. They said
there isn't. Eh?
It is cleared. Yes. So
Thuck-a-tash.
Yeah. Thank you. I'm developing a lisp in my old age.
Seriously, though.
Go there. So I put. Actually, last night, when I last night at about 10 o'clock, and it smelled like, you know, when you put a fire out with water, you know, before you go to bed when you're camping, it smelled like that, the smoke, and it was so strong. And this morning, it's all gone.
So dissipated. It's all gone.
It has. Well, at least where I am, maybe not in New York, but certainly let's hope so, because we don't want excuses.
No. You know,
poor Madonna and her lungs at her age, she shouldn't be performing.
She'll have an inhaler. Just like
she will.
Like a virgin.
Hasn't been a virgin for a very, very long time.
No,
you don't know.
Less than you, for sure.
Okay, so England beat France 6-4. They got the is a bronze medal. Are we calling it a bronze medal now?
Yeah, you can. Yeah.
Okay. A lot of people are, though.
They are, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I know, Dubs, you were 6-4. I mean, we'll get to what insanity happened on the pitch there. I mean, it was so much fun. But you had a great little quote from Davor Šuker today, Croatian legend who won it in 98, right?
Yeah. Coming right now. So it was in response to Tuchel's comment that neither England nor France wanted to play in the match for third place, right? And we talked about it, how they all wanted to be in the final. But this is Davor Šuker. He said, "I think the rich don't want to play when they lose. After 98, when we played the Netherlands for third place, we fought for that bronze medal. And today I can still speak about it with pride. Some people have won so many trophies and are so wealthy that this match means nothing to them. My message to them is be quiet, respect all 211 participants, talking about members of FIFA, and understand that the world doesn't belong only to them. It belongs to the middle-sized nations, the smaller ones, and to everyone who loves football. Whoever wins third place tomorrow," so this is the day before the match, obviously, "I assure you that in 20 years, when they're older, they'll still remember that bronze medal. That's why in this whole story, Coach Tuchel doesn't matter. He is talking nonsense."
All right.
It was quite prescient as well, like given like the apparently the rallying cry from Jordan Henderson, broken arm and in his full kit and his boots, telling the players how much he would have wanted to participate in the match, right? And you saw that in the way that England started the match, Sharms, didn't you?
Yeah, they were, I mean, they went out and they looked on the front foot. It terrified me when they went up a goal after 3 minutes. Thought, oh no.
Bunker. Dan Burn.
Bunker in now.
Yeah.
But bring on Burn.
That match, there was no bunkering in that match. It was just and forth.
At that goal, Sharms, you did a tweet about that was sarcastic. Share that tweet or paraphrase it if you can.
Which one was that? I did a few and no one understood it.
It was about bringing out Dan Burn and bunkering in.
Yeah. Yeah.
He stole your line, basically.
Yeah, basically. But I wanted, there was responses to that. What were the responses?
So there's some brainless morons out there. There really are. And I hope they're listening because they're just stupid human beings. They just don't understand sarcasm at all. They just don't get it, man. It's just, and then they get mean about it. Like, it's all very well not understanding sarcasm, but don't be mean if you don't understand.
Yeah, you 28-year-old virgin.
What I say, another one, I said another one, real obvious one. What was that one? Oh, I said basically, you know, if all games were like this game, it would be the most popular sport in the world. Some people didn't understand the sarcasm there. It is the most popular sport in the world, you wanker. So, oh, okay, thanks. Anyway, that won't put a dark cloud of my enjoyment of the game.
Craig, a little touchy this morning.
Got to a
Craig,
little bit.
Tell me, Davor Šuker's comments. Do you get them as an ex-player? Do you care about? I do.
And I think he's bang on there too, because he's right. In 20 years' time, they will remember that. It's the best finish for England since 1966. It should be something they should be fairly proud of for sure. And what they did in 98 in their first World Cup, finishing third and coming out of, you know, the terrible situation in former Yugoslavia, you know, absolutely. It was a massive moment for the country.
Yeah. You also think as well, like, Tuchel, that might just keep his job finishing third.
Maybe.
Yeah. You know what I mean?
Maybe.
Yeah. And I think Tuchel might have sucked everybody in here a little bit too, right? Yeah. Almost with his lineup, we're not really taking this seriously. There's no Bellingham, there's no Kane. And he actually puts a very offensive lineup together without those two guys. It was almost a masterstroke, if you like.
But it was also interesting that Saka played so well. And as Dubs related on, I think, Thursday's podcast or even Saturday's podcast, just he didn't touch the pitch in the bunker. The bunkerness of Tuchel. Like it, what?
Yeah. My word will not catch on.
No, I know. Madonna dry humping. Let's see if that catches on.
Right in a bunker.
But it's like, why? He's such a great player on the ball, plays well defensively, and he sat his bum on the bench during the most important time. And it just goes, yes, Tuchel may have saved his job. But it also just reoccurred to me, like, you shouldn't be in this position in the first place.
And that's the point, Wonga. That's why I think people are upset, simply because it's how they went out. It's not that they were playing a third-place game necessarily. It's that the opportunity was there, and it was sitting there for them up a goal late in that match. And that's why people are aggrieved at Thomas Tuchel. That, man, they were that close to getting to a World Cup final for the first time since 66. Which winning, quite frankly, winning the third-place game wouldn't touch losing the final, right? I think they'd much rather lose a final than win a third place game. And like Craig mentioned, you know, Croatia, that was a point with Croatia back in 98. It was 91 they got their independence. 91, right? That's a new country, right? And I understand it goes back to like begin thousands of years, but we're not getting into Croatian, Serbian politics right now. But that was such a massive moment for Croatia on and off the pitch, right? And what they were going through and had been going through. That's why it meant so much. A lot more, I think, than perhaps in England, for example, this year. That's the argument to, I think, what Shuka's saying here. Although I do kind of agree with what you're saying to a certain point. Okay.
I thought that was the crowd.
What a match, though.
Anyway, it's crazy. What was that, yeah, Dubs? What was that? 6-4. What happened?
It was very offensive. And it's interesting, like you just alluded to it. I wonder that the nature of the loss in the semifinal, how they bunkered, and then all of his substitutions were reactive and defensive and negative. I wonder, because of that, he starts the match the way that he does. And then England, I mentioned the motivational speech given by Jordan Henderson, and you saw players like a Declan Rice, who's played so much football this year. Like, I think you saw it wear on him over the course of the tournament, but all around him, and like with Marcus, it's hard to say, Marcus Rashford.
Oh, now all of them now.
Actually, it's Rashford.
I know. Velfian. I'll just say
it all falls apart after all these weeks. It falls apart today.
Tony, Saka. It was tremendous. And an opponent in France who seemed to have the opposite view of this match, where they were not going to show up. And I think it was Mbappe post-game who becomes the all-time leading scorer at World Cups. He passes Messi, gets two, so he's the lone player at the top of the Golden Boot race now with 10. So they push back in the second half. But I think it was Deschamps we just talked about, and it's his last match at the helm, right? And then that's how his players kind of pay homage to him, where they lay an egg in that first half. So England was tremendous. They were on a front foot. They were really aggressive. Brilliant to see Saka, to Wonger's point, but there was very little opposition. It was like France may as well have not been on the pitch. And then they show up in the second half, and then they push back, and it looks like, okay, let's go, Tuchel. Like, you got to make some subs now. But to my point about Rice, he's played 69 matches now, and 5,416 minutes, and that's over the course of a World Cup, Premier League, Champions League, League Cup, World Cup qualifiers, and international friendly. So have a good little couple of weeks here, Declan Rice. But honestly, it looked like an all-star game. There was very little defense. There was very little tactics. It just seemed open. But it was a delight, because I really wasn't expecting that. And it was great to see a player like Saka get a hat-trick. And for Jude Bellingham to to give him, like, as if he could endear himself anymore to his teammates and to the adoring public, hands him, when he's on a hat trick, hands him the ball to score the pen, which is a great pen. And then in injury time, in stoppage time, he has this brilliant run and this incredible goal to score the most for an England player ever at a World Cup at this point. Like, that was just the icing on the cake for England.
Yeah, I mean, listen, the fact that he did that and gave the ball to Saka when he could have got the record himself right there and then.
I know.
Albeit in a third place game. But regardless, I mean, it shows this guy's captain in waiting, isn't he?
Yep.
Doesn't it seem that way for England?
I agree.
Kane's, what, 32, 33 now? He's not going anywhere anytime soon. But it seems that Bellingham is more of a natural leader, I think, than Harry Kane, who does nothing wrong as a captain. But he's not your typical captain. He's pretty quiet, I think. That goal, Jimmy, by Bellingham, I mean, from inside his own half, if that was a semi-final or a quarter-final late in the game, we're talking about that as being one of the great World Cup goals, aren't we?
Yeah, 100%. Mm-hmm. It was amazing just how calm he was as well, just waiting, you know, drew the keeper, drew the defenders, comes across the box and puts it in the back of the net. For me, it just showed his class. There's a reason why he is one of the best players in the world. There's a reason why he is at Real Madrid, because only certain players would do that. A lot of players in that situation would panic and try to take a shot. But for him to have the composure, just go, okay, no problem. I'll just dribble across the box through all of you. Not a problem. But, you know, when you're talking about captain as well, is he a leader? Yeah, absolutely is a leader. You know, some lead differently. He leads by example. But you can't take anything away from Declan Rice as well, because I think he is a good captain. He's a good leader, you know, so I think it's promising for this English team. There is some leaders going forward that are going to be together. But yeah, it was a good performance. And I think just in that match alone, I think that's where both sides showed their firepower, the players up top, and it was just everybody expressing themselves. And that's what you want to see. That's what you expect from your top players and your attackers, is just to drive up defenders and make something happen. And they did. It was almost like they were allowed to express themselves and play with freedom forward. And they both sides went with numbers, and it was enjoyable to watch. It really was. I mean, I was in a car on the way home watching it.
Imagine for the defenders.
I was watching the road, but
the defenders coming on it, seeing this guy Bellingham come on in what, the 79th minute, and your legs are heavy and he's running at you.
Oh yeah, it's the last thing you want to see.
It's the last thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know, Craig, though. A wise man once said, why do we need coaches? And that kind of demonstrates why do we need coaches, man. If that was just football, like every game was like, just let the attackers, the skilled players have fun out there, do their thing. And that was football. And we didn't have these negative systems forced upon these wonderful athletes by these pragmatic, boring managers. My God, what a sport it would be, though, right? Yeah.
You think with Tuchel as well, I wonder if he was like reading all the stick that he was getting. Oh, you're too defensive. And he's probably gone, all right, piss off, watch this then. Okay, I'm gonna go the opposite this game.
Exactly.
See what happens. And he's up 4-0 at halftime looking at his staff going, I can't believe that. Why didn't we do that in the last match?
Damn it. I was wrong all this time.
Well, I was just also amazed that Gordon Ramsay, the chef, scored the sixth goal for England. it seemed like a celebrity game. That's what I'm saying.
Like, what? Okay. I was like, is this Anthony another looky-likey?
But it did. It seemed like I was thinking of all four of you that have played in these charity games. And that last. No, you've been. You hurt yourself, I know, but yeah. I can imagine how the players just look at James Sharman and Nets with the gloves on, going, oh, this is going to be fun.
Him.
Yes, yeah, but when you're out there,
for us.
Yeah, Jimmy just played in a charity game with all the former Brazilian legends, and former players who are now legends. but it looks like so much fun, and I have to say, England, even a little bit of France, looked like they were having fun after they scored a couple. Like, it's not like they went home. It looked like a blast out there.
No, except for Elise, who couldn't finish his dinner.
Yeah.
What is going on?
18
like seven assists, but he had especially the one that he played to Dembele on the first touch, gets it back again, and then he curls it with his right foot. I thought, okay, surely this is in the back of the net. He just couldn't find his finishing boots, his scoring boots this World Cup. It was really strange.
He could have scored a hat-trick in that match.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So Deschamps says farewell, and in comes Zinedine Zidane, which is really exciting. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if he can manage or coach. I don't know. Real Madrid, I mean, he wasn't known for his tactics, but maybe a man manager, maybe. Players will love him. They'll revere him, but it doesn't make him a great coach necessarily. It doesn't always work, does it?
Mm-hmm. Doesn't always work. Great players don't make generally great managers. They just, they're different animals, and they've gone through their whole careers from youth right up, playing with the very best, not really needing to tell people what to do, how to defend, how to attack, how to find space. It's just, and then you've got to coach that, and they just tend to not be able to do it at levels that some other people can.
Still, it's going to be fun to watch, right? Nations League is later this year.
Mm-hmm.
England's got Spain in the Nations League in their group. Croatia as well. And I forget the other team, but anyway, we'll get to that near the
Sorry, and obviously. Can I, is Nations League, is this new-ish?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, new-ish like last years, a few years.
Yeah, but not, has it been, like, has there been much talk about, like, I haven't sat around going, oh, Nation League is coming, and it's a huge trophy, and... am I amiss? Am I?
It's trying to find its feet still. I think it's trying to establish itself. It's good. It's something. It's a real. It's a legitimate trophy, and it's better than all the friendlies we used to have. And I think with World Cup maybe going to 64 teams, which will take away any kind of theater with qualification, it's going to have even more weight carrying with it. So I think it's pretty cool. I like Nations League, but you're right. Until your team's in the final, you don't really care that much. I think it's probably fair to say, right?
Well, they put some importance on it. I mean, look at Sweden. They didn't win a World Cup qualifying game, but because they performed well in Nations League, they got into a playoff spot. So they're trying to put emphasis on it. And you're right. It was to get rid of friendlies, basically, and make those matches somewhat meaningful. But it is fairly new. I'm not sure if I'm that excited about it, to be honest with you.
I was in LA last year. Last year, LA for the semifinals of the CONCACAF. Anyway, it was pretty cool. It was. So, hey, let's get behind it, shall we? Let's do that. Listen, so we're getting set for Argentina, Spain. We will be back tomorrow on our regular podcast platforms for a full wrap of the World Cup and the final one. But this is our last show on Canada Talks through Sirius XM. We've been doing it pretty much every day through the World Cup, an hour, which has been a ton of fun. And we don't hate each other too much.
Not yet.
It's been a success. I know we've still got another 2 minutes left, but I think overall it's been we've thoroughly enjoyed it.
Yeah, and we'd like to thank our friends at SiriusXM for giving us this opportunity, if that's how you've been consuming us every day at 2 o'clock on Canada Talks. I think we did pretty well, considering... What do you think? Thank you.
Telling me I'm patting myself on the back.
we held it together. There were some long, long days where we had to text each other. Who's going to be here? Who's going to be around? Because we were so busy. But once again, Dubs, what's our mantra so we can get through this stuff? What is it? What is yours that we've now adopted?
We get to talk about soccer for a living.
Remind yourself every day.
Win one for the Gipper.
That was not my mantra.
But I guess the other thing I wanted to... thanks for everybody for listening to us. Once again, find us on all of the platforms, Instagram, YouTube, Patreon. We've started that. Our friends at SiriusXM appreciate everything you've done with us, and download their app and utilize that. You'll find Footy Prime on that. And feel free to ping them and let them know how much you've enjoyed having Footy Prime World Daily in your households, in your cars, across the board. Anything else, Sharms?
No, just follow us, like I said, and leave 5-star reviews and all the platforms. They really help. We're going nowhere. Like I said, we've got a full wrap show tomorrow. That's Monday of the World Cup. And then we'll probably do some pre-records for the remainder of the week, so there'll be content all week long. And then we'll reassess for the brand new season, because it's just around the corner. Teams are in camp right now. MLS continues, CPL continues, NSL continues, football continues. The U20s CONCACAF Championship kicks off in a week or so from now. So it's all going nowhere. It's been some ride. We thoroughly enjoyed it. But until now, make sure you enjoy the match today. It should be an absolute doozy. Spain, Argentina. Till next time. Cheers for listening.
Brought to you by BetMGM. Keep it legendary.
Legendary.
Or make it legendary. Legendary.
Footy Prime is brought to you by BetMGM. Make it legendary. Check us out on YouTube at youtube.com/footyprime and subscribe. Leave us some comments. We'd love to hear those. And check us out on Instagram at footyprimeig and on Twitter at footy_prime. And check out wearefootyprime.com. Sign up for our newsletter.
I want to shout out Harry Nikolidakis, friend of Montreal TSN 690, and a friend, Simon Slikas, of the family who works there. But he commented on our YouTube about the Davor Šuker. So I should give Harry credit for that, because that's why I went and I sought out the actual quote. So thank you, Harry, for that.
There you go, Harry.
All right. Yeah, and for anybody commenting on YouTube, you're crushing it. We love the community we're building. So keep making comments and keep talking to each other, because there are some really good dialogue and discussions on our YouTube.
Arguments sometimes. Certainly opinions.
And to all our folks who have subscribed to our OnlyFans account, thanks for keeping us up.
I hope you enjoyed the content.
Oh, the Donna poster. The Donna poster.
That's it. Right?